WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? It is May 28th, 2015. Happy Thursday, ladies and gents. We've got a fun-filled show filled with, of course, a lot of discussion. Oh boy, folks, how about last night's scene, huh? The Golden State Warriors booking their ticket to the NBA Finals. And, of course, for all the Spartans out there, I mean, just how cool was it to see Day-Day, Draymond Green, former Michigan State men's basketball player, how cool was it to see him celebrate with his Golden State teammates yesterday as he now graces the creme de la creme, the biggest stage in basketball, the NBA Finals. Oh, that it gave me goosebumps watching Day-Day, do his thing yesterday, you know, seeing as though, you know, I was one of the journalists who used to cover Day-Day when he was a player here at Michigan State. Cool stuff. We'll talk about the Warriors heading to the NBA Finals and taking on the best player in the land in LeBron James. Also, as promised, yesterday's show, we told you we'll talk about it. Is the NBA's, well, I should say, is the three-point line in general hurting the game of basketball? We'll have Throwback Thursday for you. Chat about Jim Harbaugh saying that Michigan State is the big kid on the block. The Bulls with a big fire firing their head coach Tom Thibodeau today. All of that and so much more. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners again for this May 28th. For the second time in 3 years, a Michigan State great has earned the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame's Humanitarian Award. How about that? Steve Smith is one of three winners of the 2015 Manny Jackson Basketball's Humanitarian Spirit Award. The Hall announced that yesterday. Now, Smith is joined by Kansas coach Bill Self and former Reebok CEO Paul Fireman. Now, Irvin Magic Johnson, of course, was one of the 2013 winners. Hats off to Steve Smith. He always has a fantastic hand in the community. All right, as first mentioned by USA Today, entities by the big lead and for the win, Garrick Sherman, that name ring a bell? Well, he's a former Michigan State big man who finished his career at Notre Dame. He had a series of bizarre and yet revealing tweets about his time here in East Lansing, Michigan. Now playing professionally in the European country of Georgia, things seemed to come off the rails for Sherman when he fired this missile of a tweet right at the Michigan State men's basketball program. He tweeted, quote, "At the Final Four, Tom Izzo told me not to bleep embarrass myself in front of a crowd bigger than my hometown after I airballed a shot." And that was followed by a set of crying and laughing emojis. He went on throughout the night tweeting more things about his time here in East Lansing, some that will have your jaw completely on the floor. We'll reveal what the other tweet said later on in the show. You don't want to miss that. All right, the Michigan football coach, Jim Harbaugh, he admitted in front of a crowd of nearly 200 high school coaches that his program is not currently the state's primary football program right now, but he was at the Horatio Williams Clinic in Detroit, where Michigan State has come in previous years, to ask for the help of Detroit area football coaches. He says, quote, "We know we are not the biggest guy on the block. Michigan State's the biggest guy," our boss said. Now, that was met by a single individual in the back of the room clapping, which Harbaugh acknowledged, quote, "rightfully so," end quote. We'll chat about more of that on later on in the show. Don't touch that dial. All right, Tigers slugger Yoenis Cespedes blasted a three-run home run at his old stomping grounds Wednesday afternoon, leading the Detroit Tigers to a series-winning 3-2 victory over his former Oakland A's ball club at the Coliseum. Now, with righty Alfredo Simon on the bereavement list, and lefty Kyle Ryan on the way from AAA Toledo to the big leagues on Wednesday morning. Brad Ausmus, Tigers manager, tabbed right-handed reliever Alex Wilson as the spot starter. The Tigers now begin a four-game road series starting tonight against the Los Angeles Angels. And news concerning Justin Verlander, pitcher for the Tigers, he is heading back to the minors. Verlander has been cleared to begin a minor league rehab assignment and is tentatively scheduled to make his start with AAA Toledo on Sunday. Now, this news comes a day after Verlander struck out 9 batters and threw 4 1/3 shutout innings in a simulated game out in Oakland. All right, folks, and after a generation of wishing and waiting, the Golden State Warriors have finally arrived on basketball's biggest stage again. Steph Curry had 26 points and 8 rebounds. How about Harrison Barnes adding 24 points as the Warriors advance to the NBA Finals for the first time in 40 years? With a 104-90 victory over the Houston Rockets on Wednesday night, the Warriors will meet, of course, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 1 of the NBA Finals, which take place on June 4th at 9 p.m. The Chicago Bulls have dismissed head coach Tom Thibodeau. Team said today, Thibodeau just finished his fifth season leading the Bulls, who were eliminated by the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference semis earlier this month. He had 2 years and nearly $9 million remaining on his contract. And defenseman Duncan Keith assisted on 3 goals, including 2 from the new-look top line of Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, and Brandon Saad, in less than 4 minutes to help the Chicago Blackhawks defeat the Anaheim Ducks 5-2 on Wednesday at the United Center and force a winner-takes-all conclusion to its best-of-7 series. Game 7 is Saturday at the Honda Center at 8 p.m. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. I think it's about that time to start the show.
I think the remarkable thing about the noise inside this arena is that these fans have been this loud through thick and thin. I'm not supposed to be biased here. But this is an organization that even when you entered as a rookie had its periods of struggle. What has been the driving force behind where you are right now?
I mean, we want to win and bring a championship to the Bay Area. They've been so diehard fans for so long. And they deserve it. I was just talking to Draymond, D-Lee. 2 years ago, we were sitting on this court after a second-round loss to San Antonio, thanking them for the support. Fast forward 2 years later, we were 4 wins away from the goal, so this is pretty special.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And what you just heard was the voices of course, Doris Burke of ESPN, who does one fantastic job covering the NBA, excuse me. She's fantastic. I love Doris Burke. Big fan of hers. That's her during the aftermath of the Golden State Warriors winning Game 5 of the NBA's Western Conference Finals against the Houston Rockets. Of course, the Warriors taking the series 4 games to just 1. And you heard from Steph Curry there. And my goodness, is he good or what? And you know, it's so funny because when you look at Steph's game, you know, it's just a joy. It's just fun to watch. I mean, he can shoot from anywhere on the court. His handles are just, just unbelievable. And, you know, on a night, though, when Golden State stars and Steph Curry, who didn't, in my opinion, have a great shooting night last night. And then, of course, Klay Thompson, who also had his ups and downs throughout that game. He even went out due to concussion fears after taking a knee right to the noggin. But he kind of struggled, kind of had an up and down game. But, you know, players like specifically one player who really, you know, if it wasn't for him, I don't know if Golden State would have pulled out that game. And that being Harrison Barnes, who was simply fantastic yesterday. And that's the thing about this Golden State team. They're so deep. They're so talented, and now, folks, I tell you what, you better get your popcorn ready, because you got the Golden State Warriors taking on the best player on the planet, bar none, in LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Of course, this is LeBron's first year with Cleveland after a stint out in Miami. And it's really cool because, you know, I really think that this is going to be an opportunity of legacy for many players and many personnel involved with this year's NBA Finals. And the reason I say that is because, you know, more so the big elephant in the room being LeBron James. LeBron James, we all know, is the best player on the planet. And it seems as though every game that goes by, every playoff appearance that goes by, we are talking about new accomplishments, new records, and new trends being set by LeBron James that we previously have never seen before. So much so that LeBron, of course, is garnering comparisons to the likes of Irvin Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, and probably the biggest name that everyone likes to chime in and chat about when it comes to LeBron's legacy is where does he stack up against Michael Jordan, of course. And Isaac and I discussed that earlier this week. But for LeBron James, I mean, just imagine if LeBron James wins this series against the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, doing it with the personnel that he's going to be doing it with in this year's NBA Finals. I mean, we mentioned when he was in Miami of how, of course, he had the likes of Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, an uber-talented team in Miami that was supposed to win not one, not two, not three, not four. I mean, we all know about the whole parade that ensued when LeBron came to Miami, right? And that whole rant they went on. But, you know, that was supposed to be like, you know, a dynasty. And you can use that word in some regards when discussing that Miami Heat team, but there are many people who criticize LeBron because it's like, okay, you had to team up with other superstars in order for you to get that coveted ring of yours. But now, to see LeBron return home, to announce that he would come back to Ohio and play for the Cleveland Cavaliers, the same team that drafted him as a rookie, and to see the fans now rally behind LeBron and to see how he doesn't have, you know, the likes of Dwayne and Chris anymore. He's doing it now with guys like Matthew Dellavedova, Josh Smith, you know, and Iman Shumpert, Kendrick Perkins. I mean, it's unbelievable to see what exactly has gone down in LeBron James' career. And this really is a moment of legacy for him. Because I tell you what, if he does go out and is able to corral and rally his team, rally his troops to beat in what many people feel as though is the best team in the National Basketball Association today, in the Golden State Warriors, that's just another fantastic notch on the legacy of LeBron James. On the flip side, not just talking about LeBron here, how about the legacy of Steph Curry? A player who is quickly becoming my favorite player to watch in the NBA. And the reason why I love Steph Curry so much is because, you know, I look at Steph's game, and it kind of reminds me of my game. Now, I would not be as ignorant to say that I'm as good as Steph Curry. Never would. I wouldn't be sitting behind this mic if I was, folks. But Steph has the same mentality that I used to have when I used to play. Folks, I was a shooter back in high school. I mean, the jump shot is what I lived off of one. You know what I mean? And I used to throw up crazy shots, and I'm pretty good at shooting the basketball. Steph Curry has that same mentality, but if he is forced to put the basketball on the floor and drive a little bit and even, you know, dish to his teammates, he can do that as well. And that's what I used to try and do when I was playing back in the day. And still, you know, to this day, when I'm at, you know, the local rec league or at IM West here on campus, right? But, I mean, and for Steph Curry to emerge as the NBA's MVP and to defy the odds when he was in high school where only Davidson recruited him. Then to go to college where there was still a lot of criticism on him. He's not big enough. He doesn't have the size. And then for him to just go bonkers in the NCAA tourney and then for everyone to put the spotlight on him and say, oh man, this kid's pretty good. And then for him to go and enter the NBA draft and for the criticism still to lie with Steph Curry that he doesn't have the size, he doesn't have the intangibles, and you got to do more than just shoot to be successful in the NBA. There are many people that did not think that Steph Curry would succeed in the NBA. So this is also a legacy year for him as well. And then to bring it home to the local field, how about Draymond Green? I got to give a clap. Let me just stop right here. Draymond Green, Day-Day. Oh, my goodness. And I was one of those guys. And, you know, I had the privilege of covering Draymond, again, when he was here on the campus of Michigan State University as a player. And, you know, Draymond was the clear leader on Michigan State's basketball team throughout his time here as a Spartan. And, you know, he just had this vibrant personality. You loved interviewing him as a journalist because he would always give you an honest and funny and quirky answer. You know, we all know how much Tom Izzo loved him as a player here because he embodied just about everything that you talk about. When you talk about, you know, characteristics of what Tom Izzo looks for in a player, Draymond Green is a player who embodies all of that. Leadership, grittiness, toughness, you know, diving on the floor for loose balls. That's what Draymond does. But I will say, when Draymond entered the NBA, I thought he was a bit undersized. I always knew he was a great defender because he was a great defender in college. But I wasn't too sure on whether or not his game at the college level would transition speed-wise to the pros. And now, folks, he's proven all the doubters wrong. He's proven all of the doubters wrong, and now we see Draymond Green in the NBA Finals. You know, I don't know if this is true or not. I have to do some research on this one, Isaac. Maybe a caller knows, but is this the first player in the Tom Izzo era to go to the NBA Finals?
No,
it's not, right? Who else?
Maurice Agar, I think, went to the finals as a Dallas Maverick. And then, you know, Mo Peterson might have found his way with one team because he was a journeyman, but I can't think of him. So,
okay,
Mo Agar did go with the Mavericks.
He did go with the Mavericks. Okay, great stuff there, Isaac. But yeah, I mean, but it's remarkable anytime you see, and you kind of have to take, it takes me aback whenever I see a player, you know, that I used to cover or was a Spartan, reach that pinnacle of success, you know, in any sport, no matter what sport it may be. But Draymond Green, hats off to the brother. Again, he was a player who was named to the NBA's all-defensive first team. There are many people out there still that believe that he should have won the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year. Of course, that honor went to the San Antonio Spurs guard slash forward, Kawhi Leonard. But what a season for Draymond Green. What a season for Golden State. And now, you know, you have two coaches going against each other in the NBA Finals in their first year. Folks, that hasn't happened since the very first year that the NBA was enacted back in like the 40s. I mean, that's unbelievable. You got, you know, Steve Kerr going against David Blatt. Oh, fun series. This is going to be a fun series. Get your popcorn ready. It was a fun time watching Golden State celebrate yesterday. And you know, what a big layoff, though. I mean, they don't play till like next week. What, like Thursday, I think that is? I believe so. Let's see here. June 4th at 9 p.m. So I think that's next week,
Thursday.
At 9 p.m. That's a long, long layoff. So a week from the day is when we'll get to see game one of the NBA Finals. But man, oh man, has it been a fun ride up until this point, and this is going to be a fun series to watch. And, Isaac, if you want my prediction, I'm going to go with the Cleveland Cavaliers, brother, to win this thing in seven games. I think LeBron can do it. And I think LeBron is so driven when it comes to that legacy and to prove the haters and the doubters wrong that he can't get it done without another superstar. He is going to lay it all out in the hardwood, and you better believe he's going to be ready. I'm going with the Cavs, my man.
I think LeBron will prove to all the haters, you know, he'll make sure his legacy is written in stone, that he's a clutch player, that he performs in the finals. And I think the Cavs will lose in six games. I just think this Warriors team is way too good. I think they're the best team we've seen since, I mean, I couldn't even tell you.
Probably, you know, if I had to equate, when you talk about the best team since, They actually had a stat. I remember it was done on Grantland. This is when Bill Simmons was still actually, you know, employed by ESPN. And him and Jalen Rose, and I forget the third wheel that they had on the show, they were just kind of rattling down, you know, Golden State's numbers and talking about their plus margin when it comes to victory and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, how they're amongst the league leaders in defense as well. Their numbers eerily compare to Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls teams of the 90s. I think this is the best team that we, if they do end up winning this whole thing, when you look at their numbers, and as far as their success goes, will be comparable more so to Michael Jordan's teams of the 1990s. And that's your, my jaw is on the floor just saying that, my man.
Well, Al, what the listeners can't see is these past 20 minutes, I've been doing a little bit of statistics myself, and they've got the best winning margin since the 2008 Boston Celtics, the team with Ray Allen, KG, Paul Pierce, the team that started 24-3 and finished 66-16, beating the Lakers in the finals. That's pretty good. Like, those are Hall of Famers right there, and the Warriors are going to have a few Hall of Famers of their own at the end of the day.
Yeah, like, I think so.
Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. You talked about him having an off game yesterday. I actually have to disagree. I think Thompson was fantastic. He picked up five fouls.
Right. He got that fifth foul. And I don't think he fouled out, did he?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
He didn't really play at the end of the game because of that ear injury. But he finished with 20 points in 22 minutes with 4 of 6 three-point shooting. And I think it's okay to get those many fouls if you're helping guard, of course, James Harden. And if you force 13 turnovers, he can foul out. He can get technical fouls, flagrant fouls. He can do anything.
Well, this is the thing why I say Klay Thompson kind of had an up. He had kind of had an up and down topsy turvy game. The reason I say it is because he did have a stretch. I mean, where he was just hot. But there was a stretch. If you remember when Houston came back late in the fourth quarter. Well, I want to say about with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, they made it a single digit game, where Golden State just went completely cold. And all of a sudden, Harrison Barnes just comes out of nowhere and says, all right, give me the ball. I'm going to put it in the bucket and put the seal on this game. And that really was fantastic to see. I mean, they're just so deep, though. I mean, it doesn't matter. If Klay comes out and has a bad game, you can rely on other individuals on that squad to step up in lieu of that absence. And that's what makes Golden State so special, I think.
Well, Curry was talking about post-game. You've got so many players who unselfishly sacrificed their own minutes, their pride, what they had done. Former All-Stars, Andre Iguodala, David Lee, taking bench roles where they don't play as much as guys like Harrison Barnes, who I always thought was the weaker link in that starting lineup. And I don't think I'm wrong just because it's such a strong starting lineup. And no means is he a bad player. Mm-hmm. But Andre Iguodala realizing he'd help the team more as a sixth man. Same with David Lee. Same with Leandro Barbosa. Same with Sean Livingston. All of these players could have started for other teams, and they've sacrificed to put together for this team. And what I love about this team is, and this is not my team, it's not my favorite, but I love the concept of a team that just works like clockwork. They work all together. It's like gears turning where one person having a good game means another does because of the great passing. And this team is just outstanding. They didn't do it through free agency acquiring a big three. They did it through drafting, brilliant GM work, and just getting players to sacrifice in trades. So it was fair enough. They did it the right way, and they deserve to win a championship, and I think they won 6.
Folks, what do you think? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I'm also curious to get your thoughts on Draymond Green, of course, former Michigan State men's basketball standout, who is now a part of that Golden State Warriors NBA Finals squad. Did you ever think that Draymond would have this amount of success at the next level? Don't lie to me. Be honest. 517-355-9527. You know what, Isaac? Finally, we get to talk about this subject. It's something that's been, you know, kind of itching at me ever since that Houston Rockets and Golden State Warriors game on Memorial Day night. That, of course, we saw James Harden, who was absolutely unbelievable. We saw him score 45 points. Just completely went off. Unbelievable. And you know, and if anything, and you talked about before the show, Isaac, how you kind of feel for James Harden, him being such a great player and having him go out the NBA, you know, out of the NBA playoff race. But he's an unbelievable player. And, you know, I always think about, you know, whether, you know, if James Harden would have stayed with OKC, I mean, just imagine it would have Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. I mean, that's unbelievable. And, you know, Ibaka over there. I mean, that would have been I talk about a dynasty. That had the potential of being a dynasty. But in that game on Memorial Day night, it really got me thinking as I sat there scarfing down my barbecue with my cousins and whatnot, and we started to engage in an interesting conversation. It pretty much, you know, it got a little bit heated. And that's concerning the three-point line in the game of basketball. I just want to rattle off some stats really quickly here. Now, looking at that game, that game four on Monday night, Houston versus Golden State, there were a few numbers that were just eye-popping. More so, folks, was the number of combined threes that were made throughout that game. There were 37 combined three-pointers made in that postseason game. That's the most ever, the most ever in NBA playoff history. 37 threes, Isaac. And looking at, and I will say this, the Rockets were able to hang on to win with the help of 17 made three-pointers. They finished the evening 17 of 32 and shot, that's pretty good, 53%. Now, in postseason history, no team had ever lost when making 17 or more triples. The Warriors are now first to do so. Because, in fact, there are only 8 previous instances of a club making 17 or more threes in a playoff contest. And, of course, Golden State was able to surpass that mark in that game as well. I believe Golden State, they finished 20 for 46 on long-range attempts. That's a lot of three-pointers being taken, Isaac.
Yeah, 78 for the two teams combined because Houston took 32.
Wow, that's unbelievable. That's mind-boggling. So I found this story pretty intriguing. So we were just sitting there bantering and saying, wow, first off, that's a lot of three-pointers being taken. And second, is this healthy for the game of basketball? Now, if you look at it, I saw this story and found it immediately intriguing and thought it spoke directly to our conversation today, Isaac. Earlier, the Washington Mystics and Minnesota Lynx of the WNBA, I don't know if you heard the story now, but they are of the WNBA, two teams from the WNBA, the Mystics and Lynx, they competed in an analytic scrimmage with new rules that seemed very out of the box. Now, the scrimmage consisted of two halves, each of which included different rules and took place in 10 minutes of game time. Now, in the first 10 minutes, shots only counted from behind the three-point arc, inside the paint, and extended low block area. Shots made from mid-range, meaning those mid-range jumpers, they don't count. They didn't count. And they resulted in a turnover, loss of possession. Now, for the second half of the 20-minute scrimmage, the shot clock only had 20 seconds on it, and it would reset to 14 seconds as if an offensive rebound occurred. When a shooting foul occurred on a two-point shot, a point and a single free throw was awarded, while 2 points on a free throw were awarded when a player was fouled on a given three-point shot. Now, a player was also awarded a free throw if they were fouled following a successful basket. And the reason why the Lynx and the Mystics, they engaged in this scrimmage was to break down some numbers concerning how certain shot attempts affected the overall productivity of a team throughout a game. And, you know, I found it very intriguing how a mid-range shot was automatically a turnover. And that's the thing I want to talk about because I think that directly correlates to our discussion whether or not the three-point line hurts basketball. Because I personally, Isaac, I feel as though kids out there who are fans of the game of basketball and who are big fans of the NBA, because me growing up, you know, I grew up in the Allen Iverson era, the Kobe Bryant era, you know, Tim Duncan when he, you know, he was young Timmy. And I grew up watching those guys play. And some of the, most of those guys, most of the names I just named, actually, they were just polished, fundamentally sound players. And I feel as though now, whenever, you know, kids watching the game now, I mean, you sit there and look, you know, 70 plus 3-point attempts in a game. Now, granted, both of these teams can hit down, hit the jumper and hit that 3-point line, I should say, and hit the 3-pointer. But when a kid is watching that, I feel as though kids out there will be watching that and saying, oh, that's how the game is supposed to be played. I'm going to go out there and jack up a bunch of 3-pointers because they're trying to imitate what their idols do. And at the end of the day, you know, and I've heard it from different coaches. I've heard it from, you know, a friend of mine who's an AAU coach, but down in Detroit. And he tells me all the time that kids, you know, they see that 3-point line and their eyes get so big and they think they can do what a Steph Curry or James Harden can do from the 3-point arc. And I just think that coaches out there who are teaching the game to our youth really need to be wary of what they are seeing from kids growing up and learning the game of basketball. It's alarming. It is alarming. So at the end of the day, does it hurt the game? I don't think the 3-point line hurts the game. What I do think hurts the game is coaches and other personnel who are teaching the game of basketball. Those individuals have to teach it the right way, how to take advantage of the three-point shot and how to integrate it into the game of basketball.
I agree. And I think the thing is, when I was a kid growing up, you know, my backyard is this, you've got this driveway and it converges into a little bit of a skinnier path. And right there is my basketball goal. And you've got two huge cracks in that sidewalk, in that cement. And I remember you always go back to the second line, you know, backspin the ball to yourself, catch it, fade away. 3, 2, 1. I'm shooting a 3 right there.
Right.
I'm not shooting a mid-range jumper. I'm not shooting from 5 feet. You know, I'm shooting a 3. And like I said last time on the show, which I would have worked on my left-hand dribble a little bit more, but that's a different story. But I think the 3-point game is good for viewers of the NBA, bad for kids learning to play the NBA. Because
right.
when I talk about my favorite sports, I always am sure to make that distinction. Because in terms of favorite sports to go to, it would be soccer and baseball. But I cannot play baseball for my life. Mm-hmm. I will not. I refuse to, just because it's not my favorite. And then when it comes to actually playing sports, it's basketball and football. So I think when you play sports, when you're watching sports growing up, yes, kids need to be taught, let's start with layups, then go to mid-range, and only once you get that perfected, let's back up to the 3. But I don't think the 3-point line has hurt the NBA, to say. Like, I think it's helped the NBA, got the viewer numbers up. And when you think about all the late-game situations, when there's a second left, a team's down 3. Now, if there was no 3-point line there, the other team can just walk off the court and call it a game.
Turn off your television, right?
Exactly.
Right.
But now that there's a 3-point line, it does create havoc in those types of situations, and it doubles the type of those types of situations, which are so important. So I actually do like the concept in the NBA, but I think the duty of the coaches is to say, listen, you're not an NBA player. Stop shooting that.
Right. I agree. I think that's where the responsibility falls on the youth coaches who are teaching the game of basketball to the kids. So I do think it's a valuable tool to use and to implement into your regular scheme each and every time you take the hardwood. But you can't have kids just constantly coming down and jacking up threes left and right. I mean, that's just not good basketball. So, and then, yeah, is it entertaining? Yeah, it's entertaining when you have pros that can hit that shot. I mean, it's ugly watching some of these pros, some of these teams who just can't, they're not great 3-point shooters. I can always talk about my Detroit Pistons. Of course, when Josh Smith was here with the Pistons and he statistically was the worst 3-point shooter in all of the NBA a few years ago, watching him just chuck up and throw up 3-point shots left and right and see them just clank the iron, that's not fun to watch. It's more so frustrating at the end of the day. It's ugly. Just an ugly game. Folks, what do you think? 517 855-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, it is Thursday. That's right, one of my favorite days here on Current Sports, because it's when we get a chance to look back in time and in sports history to take a look at what happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. That's right, Throwback Thursday is right around the corner. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Folks, did you see this story? We briefly mentioned it during our Current Sports quick hit headliners to start today's show. But it really took me aback. You know, I had to just really kind of, because I saw the article actually when I was watching last night's NBA Western Conference Finals game between the Rockets and Warriors. And I had to just kind of just pause the action on the television a minute to take a look at this article, because I just really couldn't believe it, to be honest. Now, on Wednesday, this took place yesterday again. This actually is an article I'm reading directly from the Detroit Free Press right now. This is actually by Kirkland Crawford of the Freep. And the title of the article is "Ex-Spartan Sherman Goes on Twitter Rant Over MSU, NCAA. Now, this concerns former Michigan State big man Garrick Sherman, who I vaguely remember. Garrick actually was a player on Michigan State's men's basketball team when I was here in college as a freshman. And, you know, it's really just a series, as Kirkland puts it in the article, a series of bizarre tweets. You know, Twitter, boy, I tell you, Twitter can get you in a lot of messing. It can spark up a lot of discussion depending on what you tweet. Now, Garrick is a player in the European country of Georgia, and he decided to just go on this rant, you know, and firing, you know, shots left and right at the Michigan State men's basketball team. One of the tweets here, just to read a few, not just one of them. Here's a few of the tweets. He says, quote, "At the Final Four, Izzo," meaning, of course, Tom Izzo, "told me not to bleeping embarrass myself in front of a crowd bigger than my hometown after I airballed a shot." And then he goes on to say that there was a time when he, quote, "urinated in a condom so that Darrell Summers could pass a drug test." Darrell Summers, of course, was a famed star here in the land of the green and white for Tom Izzo's team. Now, Sherman intimated that that this was during his Final Four season, which would have been the 09-10 year when he was a freshman and when Summers was a junior. Sherman went on to go off on the NCAA, but not before claiming that Michigan State coach Tom Izzo, quote, "might actually hate me more, if that's possible, when he loses scholarships because I drunkenly spilled half of his team smoking weed." Huh. Interesting. His rant continued, saying this would, quote, "show the inability of the NCAA to do anything at all of substance, and that every team in the NCAA smokes. My point is the NCAA is a joke. I still cheer for Michigan State University. I have no resentment at all." So that's just, you know, kind of a peek into the window of the Twitter rant of Mr. Garrick Sherman. Again, you know, he goes on to tweet about seven more tweets that I won't waste your time in reading. This article is on the Detroit Free Press, again, written by Kirkland Crawford. But, Isaac, I mean, what's your reaction from this? Because for me, it seems like, you know, this is just a guy who, for lack of better terms, is a little bit salty in how his career went here at Michigan State. Again, Garrick finished his career at Notre Dame due to personal reasons, and to have a quote-unquote fresh start because it really seemed as though he had a troubling time here, a troubling time that was really brought on by his own actions and no one else's. And it just rubs me the wrong way when someone has something negative to say about a program or a coach or anything of that matter, when that individual brought it on themselves.
Yeah, how the stock I put into this is more like the 2009 market crash. I put no stock into these quotes.
None at all.
He says, you know, drunkenly spilled that half his team smokes weed. Well, if you're drunk, I don't think you're the most reliable source. I'm sorry. And then, I don't know if you saw this tweet. At Benny Euskelius actually tweeted him, how hungover are you right now? And he tweeted, not at all. Two bottles of wine and a few beers. I'm fine. I'm a country boy. We know how to drink. That's, I don't care who you are. Two bottles of wine, if you down that by yourself, no.
Unless you're Olivia Pope from Scandal, right?
Yeah,
exactly. You're going to be a little buzz after that, right? Yeah.
So, no, I mean, I think if the NCAA wants to look into the issues of partying with athletes, because we do know athletes now and then, yeah, they're bound for the pros, they're not always in college for the academics. Like Cardale Jones said, you know, they didn't come here to play school, which I think I and it's a fair quote. But at the same time, to accuse your teammates of that while under the influence of two bottles of wine, good Georgian wine, and, you know, a couple of beers, I think that's totally unfair. I think he's salty. I think he's mad. And
I don't think
we should look into this for more than this discussion.
Exactly. Not at all. I just thought it was pretty comical, and I wanted to throw it out there for people to just kind of chuckle at, because that was my chuckle of the night. It was my chuckle of the morning, and it still is my chuckle of the day, I think. So, again, that's on freep.com, folks. All right, well, it is Thursday, one of my favorite days here on Current Sports, because it's a moment in which we all get a little bit educated. That's right, and where we get to expand our sports knowledge as we hop into our Current Sports time machine and throw it back to take a look at what happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. Folks, we dub it Throwback Thursday here on Current Sports. Here we go.
That the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. Goal! And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
Ah, yes. Time for Throwback Thursday, ladies and gents, as we take a look at what happened on this Thursday, May 28th, in sports history. Well, let's take it back to 1946. The Washington Senators, they beat the New York Yankees in the first night game played at the famed Yankee Stadium. How about that? All right, in 1956, Pittsburgh's Dale Long, hit his eighth home run in eight games. 1957, with a unanimous vote, National League owners granted permission to both the Dodgers and Giants to move their clubs to the West Coast if they wanted to. In 1968, the American League voted to divide itself into two divisions and reduce its schedule to 156 games. Still far too much in baseball, if you ask me, but I'll reserve my thoughts. I digress. In 1996, in a 12-8 win at the Kingdom, Baltimore Orioles third baseman Carl Ripken had his first career three-homer game and collected a career-high 8 RBIs. Man, was Cal Ripken good or what? All right, in 2001, the Florida Marlins, they fired manager John Boyles. In 2004, Yankees reliever Mariano Rivera became the 17th pitcher in baseball history to record 300 saves. Of course, Mariano Rivera is considered by many to be the greatest closer of all time. In 2005, the Cincinnati Reds retired manager Sparky Anderson's number 10 jersey. Fantastic stuff there. Sparky Anderson, man. Oh, boy, that's fantastic stuff. In 2006, in an 11-inning slugfest at Wrigley Field, the Atlanta Braves established a new club record by hitting 8 homers in a 13-12 win over the Chicago Cubs. In 2006, San Francisco's Barry Bonds passed Babe Ruth to second place on the all-time home run list as he hit the 715th homer of his 21-year big league career. Isaac, does Barry Bonds deserve to be in the Hall of Fame?
No.
Really? Why? Steroids? Are you one of those guys?
Steroids, that promotes a bad image for baseball's future, and it ruffles the greatness of those in the past. Hank Aaron is still the greatest home run hitter of all time in my book.
I agree with that. I disagree that Barry Bonds shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, though. I do think those who have used steroids have certainly tainted the game, but let them in. Put an asterisk next to their name, though, and let it be known that they did use performance-enhancing drugs. Barry Bonds, though, wow, what a feat, though. Because I do think they brought a lot of popularity. Guys like Barry Bonds and guys like, you know, Mark McGwire, they brought a lot of popularity and a lot of eyeballs to the game. So MLB does owe them in some way in that regard or conversation. Hey, disagree with me? 517-355-9527. In 2010, Paul Pierce totaled 31 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists to lead the Boston Celtics to a 96-84 Game 6 win over the Orlando Magic to advance to the NBA Finals for the second time in 3 years. And I can't believe we are still talking about Paul Pierce. He is still relevant in the game today, folks. In 2011, Lionel Messi scored his 53rd goal in all competitions this season as Barcelona won its third Champions League crown in the last 6 years with a dominating 3-1 win over Manchester United at Wembley Stadium. 2012, Eric Lesby scored 4 times to help top-seeded Loyola Maryland take home the NCAA men's lacrosse title with a 9-3 win over Maryland. In 2013, the Phoenix Suns named Jeff Hornacek head coach. 2013 as well, the Atlanta Hawks named Mike Budenholzer head coach. How about that? That paid off, right? In 2014, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers owner Malcolm Glazer passed away at the age of 85, sadly. And I missed this one. Had to bring this one up. On May 28th, 1986, Larry the Legend Bird, in his 7th season in the league, joins Hall of Fame centers Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain, as the only players to be named the NBA's most valuable player 3 straight seasons. Is Larry on your Mount Rushmore of NBA greats, Isaac?
If that means top 4, then no. Shooters, yes. Small forwards, of course. I think Larry Bird's one of those figures you can go either way with. But I think there's that Larry Magic debate, and I go Magic every day of the week. And then NBA. But Larry's top 5, top 6.
He's top 10. Oh, okay, gotcha. So he is top 10 on your list then. He does make the top 10. He's one of the greatest of all time. I certainly agree. Larry Bird, you know, and it's so funny because you talk about guys who are physically not intimidating. You know, we always talk about Steph Curry in that discussion because when you look at Steph Curry, he looks like your average run-of-the-mill guy, not that big, doesn't look that athletic. But when he goes out there, he is a complete assassin on the hardwood. Larry was that type of a guy. You look at Larry walking in the supermarket, you would think he was a farmer, let alone an NBA basketball great and Hall of Famer, right? Man, was he good or what? So salute to Larry Bird. Again, in his 7th season in the league, he joins Hall of Fame centers Bill Russell and Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain as the only players to be named MVP 3 straight years. I have to note this also, Isaac, we got a few birthdays to note today. Jim Thorpe, he was born on this day in 1888. Of course, Jim, an Olympic decathlete. Jerry West, he was born on this date in 1938. NBA player Jerry West. Eugene Robinson, NFL player, he was born on this date in 1963. Armand Gilliam, and he, of course, Armand is an NBA player. He was born on this date in 1964. And I think that next year's, on this date, when we do Throwback Thursday next year on this date, Isaac, I think we will be noting how the Chicago Bulls fired head coach Tom Thibodeau. Was that the right move?
Yes. I think there was just too much friction between the coach and the front office, and you never want that. That can get in the way, so might as well cut the ties early and move on. But I think there's something else in the year that we'll note, and you know, I'll elaborate more on this in Reflection Friday, but FIFA announced today the soccer game, not the organization actually, that they'll include women's national teams in the video game. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd be shocked if that's not the first video game franchise to include that. So that's a big deal.
Wow, that is a big, you know, all my years playing video games back in the day, I can't remember a video game being catered to women athletics at all. Like, there was no WNBA, you know, or 2K15 WNBA edition or anything like that. I mean, that's crazy. That's very interesting, Isaac. I appreciate that. And again, you can elaborate that on that, excuse me, more on tomorrow's show. But fantastic stuff. And as far as the Bulls firing time, I do think, you know, when you know it reminds me of the Mark Jackson fire that occurred with the Golden State Warriors last year. Of course, it was pretty cool because I don't know if you saw that image of Draymond Green coming over during the broadcast to give Mark Jackson some love, because many people feel as though he did set the foundation of Golden State to reach the NBA Finals. And that sort of reminds me of how Rick Carlisle did that for Larry Brown when he was the former head coach for the Detroit Pistons back in the day before he was let go and Larry came on board to lead the team to the 2004 NBA championship. But interesting stuff, though. But anytime you bump heads with upper management, it just boils down to an ugly, ugly situation, and a move has to be made. So I feel bad for Tom, but I really don't, because I don't think he'll have a hard time finding a job in the NBA very, very soon. Hit our second break. When we come back, we will wrap up the show by discussing Jim Harbaugh's comments. And, you know, he had some pretty cool comments concerning Michigan State's football team, saying that Michigan State is, quote, the big kid on the block. How about that? Let's hit our second break. We'll be right back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, we only have about, 6 minutes left in the show. Again, our phone lines are open if you want to call in really quickly, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, I'll tell you what, Jim Harbaugh, he was pretty complimentary when comparing the Michigan Wolverines football team to that of the Michigan State Spartans football team. Now, the Michigan football coach admitted in front of nearly 200 high school coaches at his program that his program, I should say, is not currently the state's primary football program right now. But he was at the Horatio Williams Clinic in Detroit, where Michigan State has come in previous years, to ask for the help of Detroit area football coaches. He said, quote, "We know we're not the biggest guy on the block. Michigan State's the biggest guy." Now, that was met by one guy in the back of the room clapping, which Harbaugh rightfully acknowledged as saying, rightfully so. And, you know, he had a 15-minute speech here. But you know what? You know, I got to commend Jim Harbaugh. And I really think, you know, Jim already, looking at this, Isaac, the man has not coached one football game on the sidelines for the Michigan Wolverines yet. But yet, I mean, the attention that Jim Harbaugh is getting right now is unlike anything that I've seen in my lifetime. I mean, he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's constantly, constantly being written about in the paper. Well, you know, and I will say this. I like the way how Jim Harbaugh is stirring up things. He's doing it the right way, I think. And I even though the SEC is still salty and still complaining about Jim Harbaugh, you know, and his whole satellite camp thing where, you know, he's leaving Michigan and going to different camps and in other schools back, you know, backyards in their wheelhouses and trying to recruit, quote unquote, their kids. Hey, If the Big Ten allows for that, then can you knock the guy? I mean, I you can complain all you want, but if that conference allows that, you can't knock him. He's doing everything necessary to make sure that the Michigan Wolverines get back to some form of relevant success in the college football world once again. He's busting his butt right now. He's going everywhere to recruit. He's doing tons of talks left and right. You know, he's the branding of Michigan's football team. I mean, he's bringing that to the table as well. I can't hate on Jim Harbaugh right now, Isaac.
Yeah, Al, it would be, like you said, he's getting a totally disproportionate share of media attention. It's like if somebody of my stature would go coach, you know, college football. It's right. That big of a deal. But, no, Harbaugh, really, though, for as much attention as he's getting, he hasn't done anything wrong. Those recruiting violations we were talking about were so minor.
It's one of those, they're like third-tier recruiting violations where he's not even going to get punished from them because he reported them at the end of the day as well, so.
Yeah, to all other MSU students or fans, just let's forget those. Those are not a big deal. Just, you know, that's not his fault. But Harbaugh, for all the attention he's gotten, he's done everything right. Recruiting in other states, in other, you know, SEC schools' backyards, there's nothing against that. That's smart. That's not unfair. That's not against the spirit of the game. You're recruiting kids who you think will be best for your program. What's wrong with that?
Exactly. And I really digged his comments concerning the Michigan State football program. But Jim Harbaugh is just keeping it real.
Of course.
Because right now, when looking at Michigan State, who has finished, you know, top five in the nation when it comes to the final college football rankings, you know, back-to-back years. They've won the Cotton Bowl. They've won the Rose Bowl. I mean, right now, Mark D'Antonio and the Michigan State football team are numero uno. They are the big kid on the block. And Jim Harbaugh knows that. He's keeping it real, and I think he's going to use that as a big motivational tool for the rest of his team. And that's really going to be the rallying cry, one of the rallying cries, I think, for Michigan as they embark on a new era with Jim Harbaugh.
You're exactly right. And I think the other thing it does is he might temper fans, you know, expectations a little bit, bring a little bit more humility and saying, listen, we know we've got one of the best, championship-wise, the second-best team in college football history.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we are not there. Right now, Michigan State is there. That's where we want to get. We are not there, but we're going to try to match their every action in order to get to that point. And I think Harbaugh did everything right in this press conference and so far as in his 10 years as the Michigan football head coach.
Boy, I can't wait for next year's college football year. I can't wait for that Michigan to Michigan State game. That's going to be absolutely bonkers. Before we close out the show with just 1 minute left, quick update concerning Rory McIlroy. He suffered a nightmare first round at the Irish Open today as he shot his highest total since his final day at the Masters meltdown in 2011. The world number one reached the turn at 41 and finished with a 9 over 80, leaving him dead last of the morning 78 starters. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic Thursday. And be easy, people.